So here I am at Debenhams Otway, our legal experts, and today I am delighted to be talking to one of the partners and head of the family team. It's Helen Young. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Kerry. Good to talk to you.
So today we're going to be talking about two different types of maintenance, child maintenance and spousal maintenance.
Yes, that's right. There is a difference. Mm-hmm. Spousal maintenance is paid to spouses when they break up. And child maintenance is paid when you've been married or unmarried.
Right.
So I thought it would be helpful to give some information about spousal maintenance and how you might potentially claim that, how the courts look at it, and decide how much should be paid and for how long.
Definitely, because I'm a single mum. I've got two kids, so, and I do get some maintenance from the father of the children, but I do remember it being quite a lengthy and quite arduous procedure. So where do people start?
Potentially it can be. I mean, we always start with trying to find common ground and see if we can agree, because it's far better and far cheaper if you can reach an agreement with your estranged partner rather than having to go through a court process. But what I always tell people when they come to see me is what would be likely to happen in the court process if they can't agree, because they need to understand where they might end up, and, you know, how long that process is all going to take. So when the court looks at spousal maintenance, they look at the practical things. They look at what everybody needs in terms of, you know, running a home, looking after the children, you know, buying the food, going on holiday, all of the things that you would expect. And they expect both parties to come up with their budgets, so saying what they need for the future. They look at what people are earning and potentially also what they can earn, because it may be that with the change in their life comes a change in their working life, and they have to then perhaps go out and seek further work. So the judge will take all of those matters into account. A judge also has to consider whether it's possible to completely have a break between the spouses. And what I mean by that is by actually dividing out all of their finances so that they are completely separate.
Right.
So it's a duty to consider what we call a clean break.
Mm-hmm.
Now, often it's possible to clean break with your capital assets, your money, your house, you know, shares, policies, all of that sort of thing. And so we may be able to achieve a break on capital, but on the income side of things, on the maintenance side of things, we may have a situation where there is ongoing spousal maintenance, often in circumstances where one parent has been staying at home more to care for the children, whilst the other one has been going out and bringing the money in for the family. Now, used to be, in years gone by, that you would often get maintenance orders made for life. So basically, you'd get an order that says you're going to get X amount. Often it's inflation linked, so it goes up every year. And you'll get that amount either till one of you dies or until you remarry, because you can't get spousal maintenance if you've remarried. But most recently, the courts have been looking at that and tending to say, well, actually, we're not going to make these orders for an indefinite period of time.
Things change too quickly,
absolutely,
don't they?
Yeah. Absolutely. So what they are tending to do now is make maintenance orders for a period of time. And usually that period of time is to allow the person who's receiving the money to make adjustments in their life, you know, to perhaps look for work or retrain, to, you know, gain further skills so that they're then able to maintain themselves. So that's the way that cases have been decided in more recent times. And that's relevant for advice to clients, because we're bound by, you know, legislation, statutes, but also we take information from cases that are decided and reported, because they tell us how the judges are thinking and what the likely outcome may be for our clients if they have to embark on a court process. Now, there is an insurance to this, if you like. If you've got a maintenance order in place and it is about to come to an end, it may well be that you have the ability to extend it if you haven't got to where you thought you were going to be in the time that it's been paid. And equally, because it's about the future and nobody can know exactly what the future holds, the courts have the ability to vary maintenance. So, you know, if somebody sadly suffered an accident or if the paying party lost their job, in those sort of circumstances, the court has the ability to change the amount of maintenance. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we would hope to negotiate that without ever going anywhere near a courtroom. But if you can't, then you do have that ability to go back to the court. And one other thing that is relevant in terms of changing maintenance is that the court has the ability to capitalise maintenance.
What does that mean? Sorry.
So what that means is, I mean, normally maintenance is paid on a monthly basis.
Right.
You know, it's there to cover your monthly outgoings mm-hmm. and so on. So say you're receiving maintenance and then the person who's paying it perhaps has a change in their financial circumstances. They come into money, an inheritance perhaps, or, you know, a bonus from work or something like that. You have the ability to pay and receive a one-off lump sum, which then means you don't receive any maintenance for the future.
Right.
So it's a way of bringing that ongoing monthly financial obligation to an end.
Right.
Capitalisation claims to the court aren't so common, but they're certainly a way of being able to, you know, draw a line
finalize
in the sand
it. Yeah.
Without just having that ongoing financial relationship.
Sure.
Because people, you know, if they're parents, will have an ongoing relationship of some sort. But if you're divorcing, then it's actually, you know,
and I'm
often
sure
beneficial to bring the financial obligation yeah. to an end.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, things change all the time. People are moving on. They might be getting other jobs. They might be marrying again or having a partner
yeah.
move in. And then, of course, things should yeah. be looked at again, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, lots of people are very sensible and do that together. If they can't communicate or they really reach an impasse, then, you know, the likes of me and my colleagues will try and help and assist.
So moving on from spousal maintenance to child maintenance, what's the difference there?
Okay, well, about 25 years ago, I'm going to say the early 90s, I can't nail the exact
date. That's fine.
The government decided that they wanted to standardise the amount that people had to pay for child maintenance. So what they did was they set up the Child Support Agency, they introduced mm-hmm. a way of calculating maintenance for children, and basically if you couldn't agree the amount of child maintenance, then you could go to the Child Support Agency and they would assess the paying person in accordance with their formula. Now, you know, listeners probably know that the CSA hasn't had the best press and there were problems, and, you know, there probably are still some problems, but the organisation has now changed. It's now called the Child Maintenance Service, and they've tried to simplify the formula that's applied. So now the formula is based on somebody's gross income, and you then pay a percentage depending on how many children you're responsible for.
And how many days a week you have
yes.
the child. And,
so yeah. you calculate what the amount is, and then if the child is staying with you for a number of nights each week, there's then a reduction applied
yeah.
to that amount. So it means on the one hand, you have certainty because you know, and we always advise a client, well, you know, if you went to the CMS, this is what you would be paying, or this is what you could expect to receive. But there are some limitations in terms of what the Child Maintenance Service can do. So, for example, they can set maintenance for parents and children who are here, but if one of the parents is resident abroad, then they don't have jurisdiction.
Right.
Equally, there is a gross income maximum. So if the person who's paying the maintenance is earning over £156,000 per annum gross, then anything they earn over that cannot be touched by a CMS formula. So this is where it gets complicated.
Mm.
If the CMS doesn't apply, or if you have somebody who's earning over that level, then the courts retain a residual power to make child maintenance orders.
Right.
So they can, for example, make what you call a top-up order. So they can top up from any income above 156,000,
yeah.
for example.
Yeah.
or they can impose an amount of child maintenance in a circumstance where a parent is abroad. Now, people can get a little bit confused about how that interacts, because also if you reach an overall agreement about maintenance and spousal maintenance and child maintenance, you can incorporate that into your overall financial agreement, which you have approved by the court. So you could have a child maintenance element in your overall agreement, even if you were within the 156,000 maximum.
Yes, it is a bit confusing, isn't it?
It is. So, but the trouble is with that, even if you incorporate it into your overall agreement, you're bound by it for a year, and then one of you can go off to the child maintenance service anyway to have the assessment.
Right.
And the assessment will override anything in the agreement.
So really, you need to get advice first before you go to that stage, don't you?
And often what we do is if people say, well, we don't want to go to the child maintenance service, we can incorporate the maintenance provision for the children in their overall agreement, but they know that if somebody then changed their mind in 12 months' time, then we can't stop the child maintenance service from being asked to intervene, and then they supersede anything that the parents have agreed.
So I think the best advice is to come and talk it all through first.
Yeah, and we often peg the agreement for the children at the CMS rate anyway.
Yeah, you use
so then
that
there's
kind of
no
formula.
The, you know, then there's no incentive in 12 months to go there because you know that you've set it at a level that's about the same in any event.
Makes sense.
So that's it in a nutshell. One thing I did want to say, and I think is important. When I talk about spousal maintenance, that is only in relation to people who have been married. So if you have lived together, and you could have lived together as, you know, man and wife for many years, when your relationship comes to an end, the adults in the relationship have no claim for maintenance against the other.
If you're not married. Right.
So in those sort of circumstances, it can leave one person in quite a vulnerable position. They're entitled to child maintenance if there are children involved, and they also may be able to claim some capital payment from their other half if they need help in providing accommodation for the children.
Yeah.
But if they receive any capital from the person that they've been living with, it's only essentially as a loan. And under the Children Act, the piece of legislation that governs this, the money would then revert to the person who had given it once the children were adult and finished their education.
Wow.
And a lot of people think that if they've lived together for a period of time, you know, they have rights in relation to maintenance. But, you know, the message is very loud and clear. You don't.
Right.
So, you know, you should just be very aware of that. And just
get the ring on your finger.
Well, yes. The ring on your finger is one answer. So yes, I just really thought it was important to make that point.
And very important, because I didn't know that. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the child, you get the child maintenance, but you won't get any help towards any maintenance of the house. In your own right, yeah.
As I say, you may be, so if you were going to sell the house that you lived in and divide the proceeds, so you both need to buy two separate houses, then, as I say, you could get a capital loan from your ex-partner to help you if you needed more money to be able
to
provide that
heads.
Accommodation.
Yeah. It's been fascinating talking to you today, Helen, because it's kind of opened my eyes to what it's all about and how the courts see it, which is really quite interesting. So thank you very much for your time.
Very welcome, Kerry.